103.2 Dublin City FM, real radio for Dublin.
GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM.
With Mick Hanley, Suzanne Parker and Peter Brennigan.
In association with Tipperary Natural Mineral Water. And indeed, welcome to GAA Sports Desk. And our thanks to John and the Live Drive team for getting you home safely this evening. Now, we have a packed show on GAA Sports Desk this evening. We're going to be speaking to Aidan Shields of the Dublin Referee Referees Association about their foundation course, which is starting on Monday. And we're going to be speaking to Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin about the Ladies Football All-Star Awards. Ronan McLaughlin is going to be looking back on the Dublin Minor Hurling Finalist Nafina defeated Kilmacud Crokes, and Brian Barnes is going to be talking to us about St. Sylvester's victory over Lucan in the under 15 football final. Brendan Cooper will have all the Camogie action, and we're going to be speaking to Eamon Fennell ahead of St. Vincent's game against Port Leash in the Leinster Senior Football Championship. But it is with senior hurling that we start, and earlier on this evening I caught up with Mick O'Grady and we spoke about Crokes beating Rath Downey Errol.
Well, Mick, Kilmacud Crokes progressed in the Leinster Club Hurling Championship on Sunday out in Parnell Park, defeating Rath Downey Errol by a point after extra time. So I suppose, you know, the recent record of both Dublin and Leash clubs hasn't been particularly fantastic in the Leinster Club Championship, but for Crokes, such a tight game, it's great to come out on the right side.
Yes, indeed. You know, it was almost a replica of the Jude's match in the county final when Crokes were pushed all the way and looking enough to get a draw. It was last Sunday, they got a draw, but I wouldn't say they were as lucky as they were in the county final, but they got a draw. And in the second half, in the extra time period, they pulled away, but just about, because the Rattelli came back again, and at the last minute, they almost got a point. They would have given another draw. But it's great for Kilmacud, because that's what you want. You want to win these matches, play not extremely well, and win. And they haven't been playing too well. I think they're much better than that. And hopefully that will come out now the next day, because they'll be playing the Kilkenny champions. That will be a different game altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose in the first half of the game on Sunday, Ross King had a chance which he hit the crossbar with for Rath Downey, and then Matty Collins was forced into save from a Paddy Purcell chance, and at that stage I think Rath Downey were 2 points ahead, but Crokes had a bit of a purple patch even just before half time, and they went in four ahead at half time, having been under such pressure.
Yeah, there's no way on the, I suppose, on the percentage of play that Crokes had, they wouldn't have been 4 points up, you know. But I said Rath Downey, as you mentioned, your missed chances, you know, and could have got a goal. Had three or four very bad wides from play, I thought that would have put them differently in front at half time, or at least a draw. And, you know, they did very same in the second half, playing with the wind in the second half. They decided to start playing the short ball when the long ball they brought in the big full forward and decided to kind of starve him, not give much ball. But I think that's an experience. And, you know, Kilmacud were there before, 2 years ago, they went to the final, you know, and they were in Leinster, and I reckon that is now standing to them.
And, you know, as well, Rath Downey, I suppose, had that chance late on. They hit at least one or two wides towards the very end, having been four down, bringing it back in the last 5 or 6 minutes. And Crokes, I suppose, were really hanging on at that stage towards the end of the final game.
Well, you know, Crokes at that stage had lost one or two forwards through injury and cramp and so on. And yeah, they were struggling, but they got, you know, I think the boys came 4 points down with 5 minutes to go, back to a point, and the last puck of the ball was potentially a point or even a goal. And the ball went into the goalie's hand, and the goalie blocked it safely, and the referee blew full time. So it was heart-stopping stuff for the Kilmacud boys, and they were delighted to get the full-time whistle. And, you know, I would have to say they just about deserved to win.
Yeah.
But I think we all know they're better than that.
And yeah, I suppose looking at the way that the scores came, Shawnee McGrath for Crokes got, I think it was 13 from place balls, 12 frees and a 65, and then Ross King got something similar, 10 or 11 points for Rath Downey. So I suppose it was something of a stop-start affair.
Yeah, a lot of frees, you know. The referee was kind of happy, I suppose, you know. And, you know, I said Shawnee McGrath was hot in the day, and so was Ross King hot in the day. So it was one of those days when, yeah, 24 or 5 points came from freeze, which is too much for a good hurling game. But I suppose the weather doesn't help, you know, even though it was a nice day. It's a bit colder than normal and so on, and it's more difficult. But, you know, I'm not sure if they get those kind of freeze in the next day. It will be a different match playing with any champions.
Yeah.
And Kilmacud need to score more from play.
Yeah, indeed. As you mentioned, coming up against either Ballyhale Shamrocks or Clara, I suppose, coming up on the 16th, so I suppose any injuries that maybe either of those two, the winner picks up in that game, won't have a lot of time to recover, I suppose, to celebrate as well and to recover, get prepared for Kilmacore Crokes. But for Crokes, the game taking place in Parnell Park again, so that's an advantage for them.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Oh, that's a big advantage. That'd be a great game, actually, the 27th of November. But, but Ballyhale have won it before. They won the All-Ireland Club a few times. Clara last year was their first county final win in a long time. I think they were kind of caught napping and probably tired after celebrating. I think they only had a week also to recover before from the county final for the first round. And I think that'd be a serious team this year, Clara. You know, when you win the county final once, that's your big achievement. But when you win it a second time, you want to go further. And Clara, because all around them are teams like Shamrocks and so on, and who have won it before, and they'll want to join that band now. So they'll be very, very hard beaten, even in Parnell Park. But Kilmacore will rise to it because they haven't played well, and they have a great, great chance now to play well. They know they have to play well to win this match. And I'll tell you, it is quite possible they can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully they can do it for Dublin Club Hurling. That game coming up, as you mentioned, Sunday, 2 weeks. But the Friends of Dublin Hurling are having their celebration night November 14th, Friday week. So how are things going in preparation for that night?
Things are going very well, very well. We're still getting bookings. We'd hope to tie it up now by the weekend. And, our number is doing very, very well. We've over 250 at the moment, which is wonderful, considering Dublin didn't have a great year on the playing pitch hurling-wise. But we have a lot of supporters who come every year because it's a great night, and we present trophies to the Primary School of the Year, which is Grade School Escorita here in Lucan. The Club of the Year is Crumlin. The Juvenile Club, the Adult Club is Jude's, and the Senior School is Scuola Aidan in Whitehall. And then we have Anna Nolan getting the Hurler of the Year, Colin Cronin getting the Young Hurler of the Year, and then we have seven lads who of our senior team who got mad at the match from the different matches. Alan Nolan is there again. Alan McCrabb is there. Colin Keane is there. Liam Rush is there. Shane Durkin is there. And there's one more that I can't recall at this moment. But we'll have all of them there as well. And then, of course, we have the Hall of Fame, which will be kind of kept quiet and until the night. And that'll be a man well-deserving of it, you know. And again, it's a great night. We look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, always a great night for people to get out and to meet with some of the players. And I suppose look forward to 2015 and new things to come.
Oh, yes, indeed. You know, it's going to be a great year, you know. And Anthony Daly is launching his book tomorrow night in Kilmacud at 8:30. And his copies will be available for sale, and he'll sign them as well. I was reading the book, you know, and it's a great tribute to Dublin Hurling, what he has said. You know, Daly, with all his experience, has a massive growth for Dublin Hurling. And it's a, you know, I think it's a sore blow for him that he didn't go all the way. He went so far. But he gave it so much. It's a really good read for those who want to enjoy what actually happens behind the scenes in at a county team. And, and then he'll move aside and Ger Cunningham takes over, and hopefully Ger is a high-profile man, and he'll add to what Anthony did, and because we have to add to it because we have to, you know, go further than the last four. We've been the last four for two of the last 3 years, and we just simply have to do it. And I'd be hopeful because there are young lads coming now. Ger Cunningham's big job would be, in actual fact, to kind of maybe to, I'll use the word, drop some of the present crew because they're there a long time, and, you know, and I'm not even saying age-wise, but some guys mightn't have been playing too well because there's a need at least to bring in about 6 to 10 new players, young players who are on the fringe of the team because, you know, I think Clare have proved that, and even if any proof of this issue, you need new players on the block because players that kind of they get too too accustomed to playing, and they lose the kind of energy and that you need to win the Ireland final. So Ger has a big job, picking two or three selectors of Dublin to help him to bring in those guys. And so it's going to be a great year. I look forward to next year already. Hopefully, Kilmacud might start on a great note by beating the Kilkenny champions in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah,
that'd
absolutely
be a great start for us.
Yeah, indeed. And you mentioned Anthony Daly there. I know recently he's been expressing opinions, obviously related to the launch of his book. Do you agree with his view about certain areas of Dublin in terms of hurling not being looked at enough and not probably getting the treatment that they deserve? Or he called them wastelands or something.
You know, I I'd agree with him. You know, I would have to say, and he admits it himself, you know, Dublin hurling has come an awful long way. And, you know, it has come an awful long way because of the support of John Costello and the county board. You know, they really have come aboard. And there is no way, you know, with best will in the world, football is so strong that John Costner can accommodate everybody, because there's only one parallel part. And I saw the problem there, you know, and it's hard to understand the difficulty of, you know, making a pitch available for everybody. You know, Daly was right in what he said, you know, he had to move around, he couldn't train in one pitch the whole time like the footballers can do. But, you know, I think that can be worked on. But I'd have to say, you know, in tribute to John Costello and the county board, they have been very much on board, and they're putting big money into Dublin hurling, and you know, they deserve more. And I think Daly overall was complimentary. I know he was, because I read it myself, complimentary of John Costello and the support he got from the county board. And there's always small things. For example, Loughrey last year couldn't train in Tullamore. I know my own county, Limerick, would often have problems getting pitches in the middle of winter. So it's not just confined to Dublin. And obviously, the manager going out is bound to have a cut at different people, and that's only normal. But I think overall, Daly is very, very happy with the support he got from county board, from Dublin clubs, from schools and so on. And so I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't take his criticism of the county board too much. It was a fair comment to make, but I don't think it sums up his 6 years in Dublin.
And indeed, our thanks to Mick O'Grady for speaking to us earlier on this evening. And as Mick mentioned, Anthony Daly is launching his book Daylow tomorrow in Glenalbin, the Kilmacock Rose Clubhouse, tomorrow at 8:30. So that's clubhouse, for anyone who doesn't know, it's just across from Storgan Shopping Centre there. You can't miss it. And from 8:30, he'll be signing copies of the book. So if you're going to get one, potentially Christmas presents, head out to Kilmacud tomorrow and go along. Should be a good evening. Now, staying with hurling, the Dublin Minor Hurling Championship final was on over the weekend, and earlier on this evening I caught up with Heritage journalist Ronan McLaughlin to look back at it. We know how much work Crokes have put in at underage level and how much work Nafina have put in, but this is a very impressive performance and result for Nafina.
It was now, to be honest with you, it was as good as I've seen now the last 6 or 7 years that I've been lucky enough to be covering that particular category for the Herald. And they were exceptional from start to finish. I know they weren't at their best all the way through the year. They were winning matches, but I know from speaking to their manager, Declan Feeney, over the course of the summer, that he just was slightly concerned that they weren't just hitting their full potential. But there's no doubt that they reached that level now on Sunday. They started very, very well. And, okay, they had the breeze at their backs in the first half, but their shooting was excellent. They looked stronger. They looked better aerially. They looked more physical than Kilmacud. And despite only leading by 7 points at halftime, I mean, anybody who is in O'Toole Park, you always know that with the strong breeze blowing down the pitch, that any team has a chance in the second half. But, you know, Nafina just took over sort of the early stage of the second half, extended their lead, and then it was just a case of how much they're going to win by with 20 minutes to go, which is unusual given how well Crokes had played getting to the final.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, because when they went, Nafina had played getting into the final, I mean, they'd obviously been winning, but not winning by such a big margin. I suppose this was not particularly expected for them to win by such a big amount.
Well, they are the golden team. They're failure winners and they've won lots of championships. They would have gone in as favourites, I believe, but there were doubts about them, I suppose, given that Vincent had really, really pushed them to the pin of their collar in the semi-final. And now that is a talented Vincent's team, all right. But I suppose, in hindsight, as I said in my report there yesterday, it's possible that challenge was just what they needed going into a final, whereas Kilmacud had it all too easy against Ballyboden in the other semi-final, and they probably weren't as battle-hardened and weren't as prepared as they could have been. But physically, Nafina looked very well, and as Declan Feeney, Nafina's manager, said after the game, it's the first time that he's managed to get his first 15 fit bodies out on the pitch at the one time, and that made a huge difference. But even allowing for that, it was a very, very good performance if you're assessing it in relation to previous minor championship winners. They looked very, very strong. They looked very versatile. I mean, to see Shane Barrett, who I actually believe was carrying a bit of a knock going into the game, who'd be Dublin Minor's captain and a fullback or a centre-back at worst, he was positioned at the other end of the pitch at full forward. I thought that's where Kilmacud might get a bit of joy, given Barrett's absence from their from Nafina's defence. But Alistair Fitzgerald came in and did a brilliant job at full-back, one of the most underrated hurlers and footballers that there is in the county at this level. Midfield was particularly strong with Donald Burke and Gavin King. And basically, they pretty much put up, they just didn't hit wides. They hit, I think, four over the course of the 60-odd minutes. Putting up 126 in a county final in November is some going, even though, given it was a pleasant enough day, but 126 is a savage score to put up against a good Kilmacud team. 120 of that, I believe, from play, if my memory serves me, I think Matthew Oliver got 5 points and Jonathan Tracy, goalkeeper, landed a long-range free in the first half, but 120 is a serious amount. Owen McHugh chipping in with 6 points, Sean Ryan getting the goal in four, Oliver, I think, got five from play to go with his five from frees. I mean, that's great going. Gavin King, even. I mean, Crows, even when they knocked the ball out for a sideline, you'd think they'd have a chance for a bit of respite, but King knocked over two glorious sideline balls as well. And that's what they're up against. I mean, I think you could see Kilmacud just getting gradually disheartened. They had a few good performers of their own. Tom Fox, in particular, did well on the day, but their forward line never really clicked the way it had been up until then, and I just think they got a bit disheartened when they saw just the Fianna raising white flags kind of on a regular basis.
And our thanks to Ronan McLaughlin for speaking to us. Congratulations to everyone out in Fianna on their success. Now, staying with underage games, we're going to football this time. Mick was speaking with Brian Barnes of Sylvester's earlier on about the under 15 football final.
Well, Brian, many, many congratulations to yourself and St. Sylvester's on winning the under 15A championship final last weekend. A great win over Luke and Sarsfields, and your first win in 24 years.
That's correct, yeah, Mick. We kind of knew from the time these kids were only 7 or 8 years of age, they had it in them. They're a good old bunch of kids, you know, but they've done very well, played very well Sunday. They played well all year, in fairness to them, you know.
Looking at the game on Sunday afternoon, like 3-9 to 1-5 is a convincing scoreline. Obviously, goals win games.
Yeah, and we're kind of have the forward line that's capable of them types of scores. You know, we've like Sean Daly, Daniel Brennan, Luke Hughes in our forward line, Jack Whelan, all guys that are playing with the Dublin development squads, and that, you know, so they have one thing that you need as a Gaelic footballer today is pace. You know. And in Daniel Brennan, he's a guy that's probably light years ahead of his age for the brain he has as a footballer, you know. So, we're well able to take goals. We have a bit of pace, and they work hard, you know.
Future is bright, so, for St. Sylvester's and for Dublin.
It is, yeah. Well, I mean, for Sylvester's, certainly. Like, we kind of pinpointed the juveniles 8-10 years ago, and kind of start to put a bit of work in at nursery level and all the way through. And these are probably the first, maybe the second team to come out that done a full 2 or 3 years at nursery level. So it's starting to pay off. We've an under 13 team 2 years behind us that are very, very strong as well. They won their league on Saturday, you know. So the future looks good all right at the moment.
And for yourself, Brian, as well, great satisfaction. You were involved with the last team 24 years ago, training them that won this under 15 title.
That's right, yeah. I think I was still playing at the time. I was only 19 or 20, and I was working for Noel Cull. Noel was managing the team, and he asked me to train them. So we had a very talented group of players then as well. Keith Galvin was part of that team, went on to play for Dublin, and Derek Roach, Ian McMahon, all guys went on to play Dublin Minor, you know. And that's why I knew what the quality, I knew what it took to win a championship. I knew the type of quality that was needed, and I knew early on when I saw these kids that they had. I would argue, probably the lads from that day would probably argue against me, but I'd argue this team here is probably the most talented group of kids I've seen at juvenile level in Sylvester's anyway, you know.
And incredible, as you say, there's a group 2 years younger that are coming forward as well.
Yeah, Niall Guyden and Danny Brenner are looking after a team behind me, 2 years behind me, and they're a smashing team, you know, and I'd say it'd be one to look out for next year in the Faila, and hopefully in the under 15 championship when they start.
Brian, obviously with such talented juvenile players as well, you're hoping to grab these to go on to play minor, play senior especially for the club. Perhaps it's time for Sales to win another Dublin senior championship.
Well, please God, Vic, that's the plan. I mean, that's the long term view we have of it. You know, we do seem to have a problem taking the kids. We've always had talented kids coming through, but we seem to have an issue where it comes to getting them on to play adult football, you know, at a high level. I mean, we've a lot of distractions out here in Mullaghy, and it's hard to kind of keep them playing GAA when there's so many other sports around the place and that type of thing, and then travel and all that kind of gets in the way, and you know yourself, the normal things of life that get in the way of a teenager. But we've kind of tried to look at what was the problems, and we're trying to address that and see if we can get them through to represent the club and go on and represent the county at a senior level as well, you know.
Mm. And you weren't too far off this year either. I know you were beaten by Vincent's similarly to last year as well, but a very close game indeed, and one that possibly could have gone your way.
Yeah. I mean, we're not a million miles away from at senior level, you know. We're probably lacking one or two big players that could take us on to the next level, you know. But as well as that, you know yourself, at that level, a lot of it is confidence, you know, when you make that breakthrough. I remember when we were playing 96, like we were 5-6 years playing championship, get knocked out in first rounds, play a point, 2 points, and finally when we made the breakthrough, you know, it is. Success breeds success, and I think if they make the breakthrough, the lads that are there at the moment, I think they could go on and go close to winning the county championship. There's no doubt about it.
Mm, for yourself, Brian, are you sticking with the lads? Are you going to go forward to minor grade with them? Or?
If they'll keep me, I will, yeah. They will, yeah. I think that's generally what we do in the club. I mean, another thing we have to look at, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. But yeah, I have these kids since they were six, you know, and we've been working through with them. So the plan is to bring them through all the way to minor.
Mm. I suppose if you look at another model and another club in Ballymun with Paddy Christie as well, I think he's brought a lot of lads through from under nines all the way up to winning the 21 championship, and a lot of them playing on the senior team there that won a championship a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think Ballymun, in fairness to them, have proven that, like, if you put the effort in with the kids, you'll reap the benefits in the long term. You know, it may not happen a year, and Vincent's are the same. I think Vincent's put a lot of effort in at their juvenile levels as well, and you're seeing the benefits of it now in their teams that they're producing at senior, and even coming out of their second teams and all. It's a similar type of football that they're playing, and they're all well able to handle the ball. They're all not afraid to take responsibility on the ball. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to produce kids that aren't afraid to take responsibility, you know, and play football when it's there to be, not be afraid to make mistakes, you know.
Mm, I think you've just said it there, Brian. The under 15 grade always seems to be a great grade for playing football. You know, tactics, I know there's tactics there, but it's very pure football that lads play at this grade.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it used to go up as far as minor. I used to always enjoy going to watch minor county games because it was more of an innocence to them, you know. There was no cynicism in their play, whereas I think that's kind of, I won't say it's crept into the game much, but it's definitely there. There's more tactics and the defensive systems and that are being played. But, at under 15, I mean, the kids just want to play, you know. And if you have the players and, you know, they're good enough to play, I think you should just let them play. And that's the way we do it out here, you know.
Well, many congratulations once again on the fine win. I'm sure that the short-term goal is the 16 championship next year.
Yeah, we'll take a little bit of a break now and try and get them back training and then keep their minds on it, you know. But in fairness to them, they're a good group of kids. They don't shirk a bit of work when you give it to them. So I'm sure the little taste they got on Sunday will only whet their appetite for next year, and hopefully we go on, yeah, and at least hold our own at under 16.
And congratulations to Brian Barnes and everyone out in Sylvester's on that success in under 15 football. Staying with football, but going to seniors, St Vincent's are taking on Portlaoise in a huge game in the Leinster Club Football Championships this weekend. And I recently caught up with Eamon Fennell to talk about it. Well, Eamon, part of the St Vincent's team that won back-to-back Dublin Senior Football Championships there on Monday evening. So I suppose from a personal point of view, you chipped in with a score. You must be absolutely delighted.
Yeah, it was great to do it. Obviously, like, you know, it wasn't going to be easy, and coming up against Plunkett's, who had beaten Jude's, Ballymun and Crokes, like, you know, we knew it was going to be the toughest game we'd had all year, and it was, like, you know, totally win by a point, and it's sort of fearful if that game went any longer, it was right in the balance there, you just don't know what way it went, so we got lucky there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, you had a good third quarter, I suppose, but Plunkett's, obviously with the players, the calibre of players that they have, they were able to put it up to you, and it was very tight in the end, but you must have been particularly happy with that third quarter where you got the 5-point lead.
Yeah, that was a massive, like, you know, point for us, where every team's going to get their purple patch, and it's just a matter when you get the chances to get the scores, you have to take them, especially with a team like Plunkett's, and, like, we needed to get a few scores on board and get ahead of them, because we needed them to attack the game and open the play up a bit, which happened, like, you know, when it sort of allowed us to attack a bit more. So it sort of worked in our favour. But, like, you know, when you get that few bursts of scores, it really just rejuvenates the whole team and sort of gives the team a bit of a lift as well.
Yeah, indeed. And I suppose, I mean, in the build-up in the press, a lot of it had been talking about, obviously, Dermot Connolly and Mossy Quinn, but Vincent's had eight different players who got scores, so there was a lot of responsibility taken from a lot of players, and the whole team really chipped in to get the victory.
Yeah, again, Mossy and Dermot are so good at what they do. Like, you know, Dermot's arguably the best footballer in Ireland at the moment, and Mossy last year had one of the best football campaigns I've ever had, and he started great this year as well. So teams are always going to give them two a bit more attention, but you can't be over-reliant on the same guys getting your scores the whole time, and we needed people to step up to the plate and get the points. And like, aside from Mossy and Dermot, our other four starting forwards scored 10 points between them, and that's amazing, and we need that going forward, because every challenge now, some lad might have an off day, like, you know, we need other people around kicking scores, and we showed we can do it.
And I suppose coming into it, as you mentioned, Plunkett's had beaten, taken some big scalps in Ballymun and Crokes. How much are you concentrating on their game, or how much are you concentrating on your own game in terms of build-up for a Dublin final like that?
It's important to be aware of what they do. Like, they play the system really well. They obviously perfected it. They can be Ballymun and Crokes and Jewels. Like, you know, it's not an easy strategy to play, because you have to be down one end of the pitch and up straight away, like, you know. But they have a team full of athletes, like, you know, they're a very athletic team, and we were fearful of that, like, you know, that we can't allow them to constantly get the run on us, and we had to hold our shape. And like, we were obviously very aware of what they were going to do, and we were very aware of their scorers. But again, you focus on it for a training session, two training sessions, trying to cope with it. But like, we got into the final from playing our style of football, the way we play, a very attack-minded, open kind of style of football. So we didn't want to take away to that, because it's obviously served us well so far. Like,
Yeah. And I suppose it sets you up now for, I mean, it's going to be a tricky tie, obviously, going away to Portlaoise. We know their calibre in Leinster, and the fact that it's on in Portlaoise makes it all the more difficult. But I suppose you guys haven't beaten them last year, and haven't played so well over the last 18 months in particular. You must be, I suppose, quite confident going into it.
Well, yes and no. Like, you know, winning Dublin is absolutely amazing. It's hard, like, to get out of Dublin. It's really, really hard. But we've had two massive games. Like, Ballyboden was one of the most physical games we've ever played in. And that game, there was a lot of hard hits, and there was, like, people putting their bodies on the line right at the end there. Like, you know, so a lot of people are really sore now. Like, you know, so we're going to have to use this week just to get the body right, and then get ready for Portlaoise. But they're such a good team. They were like the hardest challenge we had last year in Leinster. They were very good, and when we gave them 5 minutes to play the football that they can play, they scored two goals right off the bat. So we have to be very careful of that as well, and we have to be sorry what happened against Plunkett. Like, you know, we tuned out for 30 seconds and Alan scored that great goal, so we can't allow Portlaoise to do that, because they showed they punished us in the past, and I'm sure after the final last year, they'll want revenge as well. So it'll be a tough game.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I suppose, from a personal point of view, are you able to celebrate, you know, a victory like that in the middle of the season, the first Vincent's team to do it since the 70s, to get back-to-back Dublin victories? Or is that something that you've completely kind of put to the back of your mind now, and you're just concentrating on getting in the right shape for Sunday week?
You have to enjoy it while you can as well. Like, you know, if you can't enjoy their moments, what's the point in playing? Like, you know, yeah, we obviously celebrate that night. But, like, you know, it's a quick turnaround. The club championship, like, especially within Dublin, it's like one game after another. Like, you know, so you have, like, literally when that final whistle goes, and if you're lucky enough to win, well, then your mindset just has to be on your next challenge. And that's the way we've sort of always approached it, and it's the way we're approaching this one. Like, you know, it's great to have won it, but it's over. So now we have to move on to Portlaoise. So your frame of mind just changed straight away. Like, you know, you have to get focused, you have to get grounded, and you have to come back down to realise what our next challenge is going to be, and it's a good Portlaoise team.
And our thanks to Eamon Fennell for speaking to us, and the very best luck to Tommy Conroy, Eamon, and all the lads as they take on Portlaoise on Sunday. I'm 99% certain it's a half-two throw-in, but I'm just doubting myself here. But it's on in Portlaoise, so get down nice and early and soak up a bit of the atmosphere. But we're going to take a break here on GAA Sports Desk, but make sure you stay tuned, because after the break, we're going to be speaking to Brendan Cooper, Aidan Shields, and Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin.
103.2 Dublin City FM Real Radio for Dublin.
And welcome back to GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM in association with Tipperary Natural Mineral Water. Remember, if you want to contact us in studio, you can. The text line is 087-977-1032. You can email us gaasportsdesk@dublincityfm.ie, or you can go onto our Facebook page, which is GAA Sports Desk on Dublin City FM. Now, the Ladies Football All-Star Awards are set to be announced this weekend. Earlier on this evening, Suzanne Parker caught up with Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin. They discussed all the issues in ladies football, but that was the main one.
First of all, maybe looking at the Leinster Club Ladies Football Final, there was devastation there for the Nafina team and for Ray Dorney, their manager.
Yeah, they were very unlucky on the day. They conceded an early goal, which sort of put them on the back foot, and they were chasing the game for most of it, and they were 5 points down, you know, coming into the closing stages. They did manage to pull a goal back in the 62nd or 63rd minute, but it was a little too late. The referee blew up shortly afterwards, and unfortunately they lost by 2 points.
Yeah, and this is a repeat of, I think, the 2011 final when it was the exact same teams in it, and Fianna came out on top in that game.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
They were hoping for the same result, I think.
They were hoping for the same result, yeah, but as I said, unfortunately on the day, they just, you know, they got caught. They got caught with the early goal, and it put them on the back foot, and, you know, the other team really defended very well, and, you know, they had been scoring freely up to that, you know, all the way through, but, you know, just on the day.
It didn't work out for them,
you know, and as I said, the goal came a little too late for them. If they had it come maybe 5 or 6 minutes earlier, they might have, you know, they might have had a chance to reverse the decision. But, exactly. You know, that's sport. That's the way it goes sometimes in finals, you know.
Well, look, Dublin still has another team that are still in Intercounty. It's the Kilmacud Crokes. I think they're next Sunday in the Leinster Intermediate Championship.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, they've had a really good season up to now. They you know, they were in their first provincial final there against Sarsfields, which they won by 2-10 to 1-8. Played very well on the day. You know, they've been racking up some big scores. You know, the quarter final against St. Helens from Longford, you know, 3-22 against Simonstown Gales from Meads. They racked up 4-11, which are pretty impressive scores, you know. And they just seem to have this sort of knack, you know. You know, if I go back even to the Simonstown Gales game, you know, they burst out of the blocks. They were 10 points up, and you were sort of looking at it. This was only in the first half, and you were sort of looking at going, well, this is going to be a cakewalk. But, you know, fair play to Simonstown. They came back. They got 3 goals in a row, and all of a sudden the game looked like it was turning. But, you know, the players have just been playing so well. They literally just dusted themselves off. They powered forward again. There's pace all over the team. You know, Aoife Rutledge, Laura McGee have been playing very well. Ciara Regan, Aisling Whiteley. You know, you can keep naming them. You know, Michelle Deveron has had a great run with them as well. You know, and Anne-Marie McBaron has been playing very well. So, you know, they've good players all over the pitch. They, you know, they're playing at a very high level, and they don't seem to be getting bothered by, you know, teams coming back at them. They just seem to, you know, have this confidence in themselves that they can push on.
Exactly. Well, the big news this weekend in ladies football, I think it's the All-Stars, the All-Star Awards that are on, and Dublin have got 11 nominations, more than Cork, the All-Ireland champions, which is absolutely fantastic, and it just shows the level and the skill involved in Dublin ladies football.
Yeah, it does. It caused a bit of a furore that Dublin got more nominations than Cork, because Cork had won the All-Ireland, but, you know, if these things are going to be based, as they say, over the year, you have to be honest in your nominations. And, you know, although they didn't win either the league final or the All-Ireland final, for me, the best team in the country this year has been Dublin. And, you know, every one of those players deserved a nomination, you know. But as I say, they're only nominations. You know, nobody's been handed any awards yet, you know. So you will look at it, if these things go the way they tend to go, the All-Ireland champions normally get, you know, the most All-Stars on the night. If that's the case, then you're looking at, you know, some of the players who have been nominated will miss out on the night, you know. But, you know, if I was to look at it, I was to be honest about it, and this is not looking through sort of navy tinted glasses or anything like that. But do I think every one of the 11 nominations deserve an All-Star? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
They have played well that all year. You know, they went through the whole league unbeaten until they got to the final. They blew everybody away in Leinster. And, you know, they came through some tough games in the All-Ireland series, you know, against Kerry and against Galway. And, you know, unfortunately just came up short in the day in the All-Ireland final. But for me, they have been the standout team. You know, Cork, although our All-Ireland champions, struggled very early on the season in the league. They were lucky to make the final in the end. You know, it was a struggle for them for the first while. So, you know, you've got to take these things. If they're going to be based over the year, you've got to take the full year into account. And if you take the full year into account, the players that were named thoroughly deserve a nomination, and I believe thoroughly deserve an All-Star. I don't see it happening because I don't see the finalists getting 11 All-Stars, you know, but they should do, you know. My one thing that I do have a problem with is the Players' Player of the Year nominations, you know, not one Dublin player in there. I know there's only three nominations, but, you know, for me, the Player of the Year this year has been Carla Rowe.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt, you know, there's nobody even close to her this year. You know, you've got to look at All-Stars and you've got to look at criteria you're going to use to pick them out, you know. And it should be your performances based over the season. It should be, you know, was that level of performance consistent? What did you offer the team? You know, how influential were you, you know, in games? And, you know, what sort of scoring you attributed to that, what your defending was like. You know, the overall package has to be taken into consideration. And if that's the case, there's only one player that deserves that award, and that's Carla Rowe, and she's not even nominated. I thought maybe it was maybe just a little backlash for the furor over 11 nominations, you know, and I know Carla is one of the nominations for an All-Star, but, you know, if you're going to do these awards, you must be, you know, I think it's probably, they call it the Players' Player of the Year, so I'm taking it that the players voted for this. I think that should be taken away from the players' hands. Not for any reason other than they play, you know, they all play usually around the same time. So what games are they actually getting to see? You know, TG Carr do great coverage and all that, but they don't show every game. So what are they basing their nominations on would be what I would be querying, you know, at the end of the day. Because if anybody has watched, you know, the games all through the year, there is only one player that stands out. And, you know, you've got to take it. She's only up from Minor from last year.
Yeah.
Has an engine that Ferrari would be proud of. You know, she started the early part of the year playing in the half back line before she was switched to the half forward line. And it's, for me, she's been the most influential player for any team this year. And don't get me wrong, the three nominations that are there all had good seasons. But I just thought it very strange that, you know, Dublin got to the All-Ireland final, got to the Division 1 League final, and, you know, you don't do that without having, you know, a standout player or two, you know, in your team. Dublin had plenty of them. You know, you could talk about Lindsay Davey, Lindsay Pease, you know, Sinead O'Hearn, top scorer through the championship. You know, there's lots of standout performers there for Dublin, but the one player for me that stood shoulders above anybody was Carla Rowe, and when I seen the nominations, I have to say I was actually shocked.
Yeah. And Sinead Goldrick, the captain, and she's up for her third All-Star in a row. So that's great as well for Sinead.
Yeah, and well-deserved. You know, and Sinead had a bit of an injury scare you know, halfway through the season. She missed one or two games. But, you know, overall, her contribution, you know, definitely deserved an All-Star, you know. And the nomination that she got was well deserved, and, you know, for me, three in a row, that's some achievement from any player, you know. You see what Paul Flynn has done with the four in a row, you know, but Sinead is quickly catching him up.
Yeah, and tell me, in your opinion, there's no Dublin player in midfield up for a nomination. What does this tell you about the Dublin team? Are we missing players in midfield, or is it just something that's been overlooked?
I think it was something that was overlooked, to be honest with you. Again, I looked through all of the nominations, through all the codes, and the two that I had a problem with were both the men's football and the ladies' football, where, you know, there was a number of players I thought, you know, badly overlooked, you know. Yeah. Denise Masterson, were any of the other nominations in midfield better than her this year in the position? For me, I don't think so.
Yeah.
She definitely deserved a nomination. At the least, you know. And another player who played a lot of her football around the middle of the field this year was Molly Lamb. Again, yeah. I was shocked that she wasn't nominated, you know. But again, sometimes this comes down to a bit of politics and a bit of, you know, well, we've already nominated 11, we can't put 13 in, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think any of that should come into it. If you're going to be honest with any award, you know, award the players that deserve it, you know. And as I said, I was shocked that both Denise Maston and Molly Lamb were both omitted. And when I looked through it, I went, you know, Division One league finalists, beat everybody during the league. I know Molly didn't come in till after the under 21, but, you know, beat everybody through the campaign and, like, you know, played Cork off the pitch for three quarters of the game, you know, and you don't do that unless you've got at least one decent midfielder.
Yeah,
because midfield is such an important area. So, like, to totally admit any of the Dublin midfield from the actual nominations, I thought was quite shocking, you know.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see what happens now on Saturday night. But Nigel, thank you very much for giving me your time and joining me on the programme.
No problem at all.
I'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon. Cheers. Bye.
And a thanks to Nigel McCarthy from We Are Dublin for speaking to us earlier on this evening. Now, Suzanne also caught up with Brendan Cooper and they discussed all the latest camogie action in Dublin.
You had one of the busiest weekends in camogie last weekend and I think there was over 25 finals on in total. How did you cope?
It was tiring, Suzanne. As you rightly point out, it was the busiest weekend by a long stretch. But we were blessed with the weather, so that certainly helped our cause to no end whatsoever. Certainly, from an adult point of view, we had a number of championship finals there on last weekend, the Senior 6 and the Senior 7, which actually rounds off the adult championships for 2014. In the Senior 6 championship final, we had Ballyboden versus Castleknock. This was a very exciting match, Sudan, and it was a match that Castleknock won by the narrowest of margins, just a one-point victory. It was a peculiar match in the sense that Ballyboden scored the first goal with almost the first puck of the ball. They scored the last puck, goal with almost the last puck of the match, and they could have actually snatched the victory off Castleknock, which probably wouldn't have been deserved because Castleknock certainly played the better over the 60 minutes. But it was a tense match, it was a very close match, but I think over the 60 minutes, Castleknock, a one-point victory is probably just rewards for their endeavours, Sudan.
And in the Senior 7 final, Round Terrace had a good defeat over Ballinteer St John's.
Yeah, this was a more one-sided match, Sudan. Round Terrace 4-2, Ballinteer 0-0. I think the best thing about this match is that Round Terrace probably had a more mature side, whereas Ballinteer were certainly the age profile was very, very young, and they haven't been around on the camogie front for all that length of time, but so they are in the process of building, whereas Round Towers had the more, let's say, mature ladies, and they certainly put that maturity to good use there on Sunday. Don't think there was much doubt about this match, Dan, right from the first from the throw-in right to the last whistle. As I say, 4-2 to 0-0 probably tells its own story.
Yeah, and as well as the championship finals that were happening, there was also three Shield finals on over the weekend. Maybe we'll look at Senior 2, Lucan and Anglo Council first.
Yeah, that took place there last night, Suzanne. I had the pleasure of refereeing that match, so I could well capable of talking that one. Again, it was a peculiar match in the sense that the Council started off at a million miles an hour. They went 3 points to nothing up after about 10 minutes, and they were well in control. And then towards the half, which was the first half, Lucan got their first score and proceeded to tag on a few scores towards the end of halftime and led by 1-7 to 5 points at halftime. They had the aid of the Breeze in the second half, and they just powered on from there, and they ran the show in the second half, Suzanne, to such an extent that Good Council failed to register the score in the second half. And Lucan tapped on another 2 goals and 3 points to leave the final score 3-10 to 0-5. Woody winners and a very good game, Suzanne.
Yeah, and the Senior 4 game was also on, and Peregrines, I think, 4-12 to Oliver Plunkett's 1-2. Now, this is very, very successful game for Peregrines.
Yeah, absolutely. Peregrines have done very well now last year and this year. And it was a surprising score. I didn't expect Peregrines to win by quite so much. I thought Oliver Plunkett would have pulled it up to them a bit more. But at this time of the year, Suzanne, you're never sure what girls maybe are in college or away or whatever. So obviously Peregrines had a full muster of players. I suspect that Oliver Plunkett were missing a few girls based on the scoreline there. So, But the Woody winners spoke to Jimmy O'Connor from Peregrines there during the weekend. He was you know, thrilled. He was more than happy now to get a Shield final under his belt. They actually won the championship there last year. So they're not doing too bad by all accounts, is that?
Yeah. And the Senior 7 game was also on, and Coola had a nice defeat over Erin's Isle.
Yeah, again, we won't go into the score on this particular one, but it was a resounding victory for Coola.
Yeah.
Again, Coola are only back on the juvenile scene in the last 2 or 3 years or thereabouts. And they probably got, and they have a huge catchment area out in the cooler area, so they have a lot of the kind of more, say, mature juveniles, say 16, 17 years of age, and they've stepped up into adult camogie, you know, and then, you know, they had a resounding victory over Oz. Oz was, this is the, obviously Oz's third team, whereas it's actually Cooler's first adult team, so there's probably a little bit of a disparity there somewhere along the lines, but nonetheless a resounding victory for Cooler. Mm. And I'm quite sure Shield that they won't be giving back to the county board, because they're actually thrilled to actually win a bit of silverware this year, Suzanne.
Yeah, and looking back at the championship finals that have happened over the last few months, has there been any shocks and surprises for you with the finalists and the winners?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Mm. I suppose, looking at the individual matches, our Senior 3 match, which was a peculiar match in the sense that Portobello owned the ball for 30 minutes against Thomas Davis at,
yes,
Senior 3.
Yeah.
They literally, Thomas Davis never got past the halfway line, except maybe with a kind of a long shot out of defence. But they were camped in the Thomas Davis, and you know, Portobello looked for all intents and purposes as if they were going to win that match. They turned around with the wind, so it looked like a foregone conclusion, but not quite sure what happened in the second half, but Thomas Davis just clawed away back into that and eventually went on and won by 4 points. So, but all the rest of them, based on the league form and championship form as they've shown throughout 2014, there was no real surprise there, mm-hmm, Suzanne, in that sense. It went roughly according to plan. No, nothing good for them.
And last Sunday as well, sorry, the Dublin Senior selection were against the DCU team, and the Dublin Seniors had a victory.
Yeah, it's nice to get a victory under our belts at this time of the year. Basically, what it was to DCU have opened a new sports complex over in St. Clair's off the Ballymun Road, and they have a beautiful 4G all-weather pitch and under lights, obviously. And they have a grass pitch, again, under lights as well, plus the gym. So we got an invite up there to play the DCU team and have a look around, because we would hope to base ourselves there in 2015 from a training perspective. So it was good for the girls to get a run around, have a look at the facilities on offer there, of which I might add they're absolutely, you know, superb facilities out there.
Mm.
Well worth a visit for anyone interested in sport, whether it be soccer, rugby, Gaelic or whatever. They can cater for almost anything now at this stage, and they're looking to work with a lot of the county teams this year in all codes. So we're delighted now that we're amongst those people that will avail their facilities next year. So a nice start for the girls, because they've had a hard year.
Yeah.
So it's nice to kind of go out with a victory, and it was a good match there now last Sunday, a very good match indeed.
Exactly. And now just looking forward, next weekend kicks off the minor championships, and it's going to be a tough enough month with the finals, I think, on the 7th of December.
That's right. Just when you think it's all over, something else comes out of the woodwork. Now, we always knew that we had the minor championships to run off because of the age profile of these girls. A lot of them will play with their adult teams within their own clubs, and it's almost impossible to run off an adult competition and a minor competition at the one time.
Yeah.
They tend to overlap and clash. So we leave the minors until all the adults have finished. So as you already pointed out, we kick-start the A, B and C championships there now next Sunday, the 9th of November. And all things being equal, if we don't get rained off or whatever, we have 5 Sundays up until the 7th of December when we run off the 3 finals, A, B and C. That's the plan, Suzanne. Whether it actually works out that way or not, a lot will depend on the weather. But, you know, I'll be trying to drive the 7th of December as being our final date for Camogie, unless you include the Dubstars match, which comes in at the end of the month. But
yeah,
that's a whole different story at that stage.
You're almost kicking off the next year when you're talking about Dubstars.
Well, yeah, in actual fact, Suzanne, there is no actual real break.
Yeah.
We'll have our annual awards on the 29th of this month, and obviously the county will be kicking back into operation there sometime next week. So in effect, we go from one season to the other. It's lucky we don't have a moratorium for not training in December as the GAA have, because we rightly snooker to them, because we wouldn't have time to fit in all the things that we need to fit in. But it's a good complaint, and you know, long may it last.
Exactly. Brendan, thank you very much for joining me on the programme.
A pleasure as always, Suzanne. Take care.
Speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And indeed, our thanks to Brendan Cooper for speaking to us. Now, the Dublin Referee Foundation course is taking place in Parnell Park, starting in Parnell Park on Monday evening at 7:30. And earlier on this evening, Mick caught up with Aidan Shields to talk about it.
Once again, the Dublin referees, that's yourself and Paddy Power, are getting together on Monday nights, from next Monday night, in fact, to put on the foundation course for new referees, and that's for over 18s. This course, I think, you run every year, and you're hoping to get a lot of new faces on board.
We hope to do, Mick. And just to make one addition to your introduction there, Gay McCabe will be actually one of the main tutors. Gay and Paddy work together, and Gay is a very... Gay used to play with Thomas Davis for many years, and he's a very talented guy, and he's a great tutor, you know, so just to correct that. Yeah, we would hope, Mick, to get somewhere in the order. So far, we've had roughly 25 names of people who've been in contact themselves, anxious to undertake the course. So, surprisingly enough, I suppose, it wouldn't be regarded as the most popular pastime, but there seems to be a great interest in it. And as I say, so far, we've had about 25 contacts who are anxious to undertake the course.
I like the way you put that that pastime there, Aidan. You know, masochists yeah. maybe might be the word really today. But no, I know a lot of referees, and a lot of referees get, you know, probably abuse they shouldn't get, but a lot of referees get great enjoyment from it as well. The course is going to take place on Monday, and for the following 4 Mondays. What time will it start, at Aidan?
Well, we'd like them to be there. The actual course itself will start about 7:30. We'd like them to come in about 7:15, because we have to register, fill up registration forms. We have a little bit of work to do in that line before we get started. So we'd like to get started about 7:30, and then we'd hope to finish around 9:30. So it'll run roughly for 2 hours each night.
And what is the agenda for the course?
Well, I'll tell you, we really cover pretty well everything with them. Of course, one of the basic points is the rules, the playing rules, that they must really be familiar with them and know them off by heart. And we will take them through all the playing rules, both hurling and football. But we'll also take them through kind of supporting stuff like filling out the reports, fitness, how to handle maybe, shall we say, players that mightn't agree with them, and what's involved in preparation for doing it, and your temperament and how you deal with players. And we'd always emphasise that they should be courteous to players and treat them the way that they'd expect to be treated themselves. All those basic principles which go into part of being a referee.
In today's game as well, Aidan, even at club level, which a lot of these referees will start off in, the pace of the game is quite quick. So I suppose fitness is an issue that you probably have to be fairly fit.
There's no doubt about it at all, that if you're going about your business and want to be a success, you're going to have to accept any more than a player. You're going to have to go out and get yourself a training regimen and stick to it and maintain it all the time, because you need to be up with play, and players need to see that you're reasonably near the scene of action, and they're more likely to accept what you decide then. But if you're 40 or 50 yards away, they're going to say, how could you know what happened there? And the fitness is terribly important. And then fitness in the last 5 or 10 minutes of a game, that's when the crucial decisions may be made. And if you're struggling fitness-wise, mentally, you won't be as sharp as you might be either. So the fitness is a very important part of refereeing, to say the least.
And Aidan, you mentioned the rules there and getting to know the rules. I suppose, you know, players and managers maybe, and maybe the supporters and all that, say different referees have different interpretation of rules. But even aside from that, while it's Gaelic games, hurling and football have different sets of rules. Is that difficult to comprehend for new referees?
Well, I've always said it is very difficult to switch from one to the other. because there are major differences. I suppose the square ball is a kind of a typical example of it now. The difference between football and hurling, and I suppose the black card, which applies in football and again not in hurling. And a guy can go out, and if he's a dual referee, you need to be able to switch codes and remember this is hurling. There's no black cards in this. It's not unknown for it to happen, Mick, that a fella get a black card in hurling, you know. And of course, there'd be all kinds of recriminations over that. But however, so it is important. And I think myself that if you're to make progress, any more than dual players, if you really want to make progress in one code or the other, you're better to adhere to that particular code. I think there's very few people have the ability to operate at a high level in both codes. I suppose somebody like John Maloney now, or Noel O'Donoghue, people like that, they could do it. But for the ordinary guy, maybe he might be better to stick with one code. Though a lot of the referees now in Dublin, I have to say, do both and are reasonably successful at it.
And our thanks to Aidan Shields for talking to us, and a reminder for you that foundation course is taking place, starting rather in Parnell Park. It's going to take place over four Monday nights, starting in Parnell Park at 7:30. And we've got that interview with Aidan a little bit short, but if you tune into On the Ball with Declan Hughes and myself on Sunday afternoon, we will have the interview in full. And speaking of Parnell Park, next Tuesday, the County Board's annual mass is taking place at 7:30 in Parnell Park. So one for you to go to if you're interested in that sort of thing. But I am afraid that is all we have time for on GAA Sports Desk this evening. Remember that The Sporting Choice with Keno Callaghan is on tomorrow at 7 o'clock. And you can stay tuned this evening for Artbeat with Kira Murphy and our very own Suzanne Parker. But from the GAA Sports Desk team, Mick Hanley, Suzanne Parker, Katie Scannon on sound, and myself, Peter Brannigan, have a great evening.